Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Has it only been 1 week since we last talked? Well, I guess it's been a week and a day, so it's been a little bit longer than it seems, but man, it seems like it's been at least a month since we've had DC Signal to Noise. I'm John Harris, along with Jim Wiesmeyer and Ali Salaka, and wow, what a week it's been. The long list of news that's transpired, we're only going to get to part of it, the part that deals with agriculture. Actually, let's start off with a juicy tidbit from Jim Wiesmeyer this morning. You and I were on AgriTalk together this morning, and yes, when we got done, you said, "Hey, I've got more on that story about why ending beef beef imports came up from President Trump. Want to hear about it?" I'm like, well, yeah. All right. Well, this afternoon we'll talk about it. So here we are Jim. What's the story here?
I researched it because even for Trump, that was kind of really out in left field, especially with the official from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Yeah, just to kind of set the scene here, this was at the announcement of the rules and application process for the coronavirus food assistance program. And so the remarks were supposed to be about that farmer assistance. In the middle of it, though, President Trump throws out that, hey, maybe we should be ending imports of foreign beef. And just completely out of the blue, with the president of NCBA there in the room. So, okay, what's the story behind that announcement, Jim?
Well, not only was the NCBA, he turned around and saw the NCBA official not pleased. And then afterwards, if you really watch closely, Trump wasn't happy with the reaction he got, and then that's when...
Well, yeah, because the rest of the room was pretty much... Yes. Where did that come from?
Yes, and that's...
WTF.
When the staff and other people started to fill him in, because he was upset that he didn't get the pat on the back for that. Well, it came to be of why he said it. A reporter that apparently he follows filed on Fox News a video. She's from Texas and apparently close contacts with RCAF. And he happened to see a video on Fox News along those lines, okay? And that's what he drew upon. He didn't know, as I was told, that he touched a third rail there.
and realize that there's a difference between NCBA and RCAF?
Yes, and now he knows, let me tell you. And you'll never, rarely see Trump, if ever, say he made a mistake. But he knew that he stepped in you-know-what. And I don't think he's going to bring that story up again. But so he watches Fox obviously a lot, and he watches other other cable shows. I won't call them all news, and that's what sticks in his mind, and that's what it was. It was not vetted at all, of course. And once he found out, he realized that he was in deep. He went in the deep doo doo. Okay. So that's the background. I'm not writing about it, but I wondered, and I asked, and that's when the story was unfolded for me, because it was really odd.
But this really concerns me, and we've seen similar things happen before, but for a president to take on a major policy initiative like that, spur of the moment, absolutely no research, absolutely no input from those that it would impact, just thinking that that's what they were looking for. That's concerning.
It's concerning, Anna. Well, you know, what do you think?
Why on earth you're surprised about President Trump being spontaneous?
Yeah,
I didn't say I was surprised. I said I was concerned.
Yeah, well, but it's so Trumpian to do that, but he's got to think through. you should have a strategy when you have a White House event. These are, they call them talking points. These are the principles that you want to focus on. And you usually get briefings, you know. Whenever I give speeches, I will ask the sponsor, you know, of it, is there anything I shouldn't talk about? You know, because you don't want to get them mm-hmm. embarrassed. It's not like I won't talk about controversial topics, but if it's going to be a very sensitive topic, I won't touch it because it would make people feel uneasy. Now, he is very good on, in college as a debater, he would have been an extemporaneous debater. But not when you're president of the United States, where you just echo what you have seen without vetting it. And so this is a fault. This is clearly a fault of his.
Well, and not even just the policy concerns, but also from his perspective and his team's perspective, this isn't the only time that he has managed to distract from the message they were trying to convey in the moment. And, you know, to your point, Jim, yeah, I used to write those speeches and talking points for governors and directors of ag. And you do very explicitly point out, okay, this is the message we're trying to convey today. Stick to this message. Here are things that you should be concerned about.
Yes.
These are things you need to know about in this event, but this is the message that we're trying to get through, and this is how you get it through. And you want to stay fairly tight to that to make sure that that is what's reported that day.
Yes. And I'm not anti-RCAF. I think they have some elements of their your organization where overall labeling should be inclusive, transparent. But then sometimes it gets out of hand on what they want. It's more of a protectionist basis. But yeah, it tells me he was not briefed because he probably doesn't like being briefed. He's very busy, as you well know, because he goes to almost every event that he wants to. But it's instructive to us that when you're watching, like I was watching it on TV in my office, I always go in, you wonder what's going to happen. You anticipate a wild item because he's a wild card. He's just a wild card president. So that's my little inside skullduggery for you this week. And the signal he got there was, he now knows the difference between NCBA and RCAF, and you don't touch that third rail.
It also plays into what you have said many times on the show, Jim, that those who make policy are the last person to whisper into his ear.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And we've seen that especially in the energy arena between the crude oil people and the ethanol, biodiesel, et cetera, for sure.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's move on to what's probably the biggest story of this week in the ag world, certainly not the biggest story in the U.S., but in the ag world, which is the Ninth Circuit Court ruling removing the registration for three of the four market-available dicamba products. Jim, you and I talked to Pam Johnson this morning on AgriTalk, a farmer from Iowa, former president of NCGA, among a long list of other activities within the corn world. And she was very strongly disturbed by this and what it's going to mean for the 2020 growing season.
Yeah, it's just another negative vice on your back as an operator in the ag sector. Now, and then you wonder about the timing, you know, because this was really for 2018 registration, and it ends at the end of this year. So I fully expect EPA, they're saying that they were reviewing the ruling, and they typically go for a stay. And that stay would probably mean we're going to provide the additional information that that particular Ninth Circuit San Francisco court said we didn't provide, or it was an error. And we need time to provide that information. And that's why I think they will get a stay.
But will they get it in time?
They can be pretty quick when they want to. And this one, I think that they will. But saying any court or government will do time is really dicey, you know. But it's happened before. These are, you know, throwback cases before on controversial issues. But this one, it just doesn't pass the logic test. Because if you want to seriously challenge that product, they have to re-register it, for 2021 season. So let the chips fall where they may. I think science can still win out on this product. I think EPA has been notified that maybe they were a little less than transparent on some of the data, but that doesn't mean you pull the rug again out from under a significant amount of farmers who use this product because it's a good one. And what do you do? There's all sorts of implications, John and Anna, that this could get into murky, that all the beans that have been planted and a chunk of them have been. What will we get into a trade issue where you don't want to import soybeans that utilize this product? You know, you remember that was an Arkansas problem a few years ago, you know? So I just don't see this holding forth for the 2020 crop. Let's hope reason prevails on this. But it is a signal. The seed companies told me in very interesting interviews that I couldn't quote them, that what does this signal ahead for EPA registrations? Will it always be over a cloud? Again, let's go take it to court. Do they want to become like the biofuel industry that as soon as they announce something, both sides go to court? Is that what we're into now?
Well, and Annalise, in this particular case, so first we need to stress for those in the audience that aren't involved maybe in production agriculture that don't understand everything going on with this case. This has nothing to do with anything related to health. This is all about off-target impact of dicamba. In the first couple of years that this product was used, there was damage to off-target plants through drift, some unanticipated drift in many cases. And I guess, Annalise, what's kind of frustrating in this is that the product has changed significantly, and the labeling on the product has changed significantly since those first 2 years of use that have really gone a long way to address those off-target problems.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when, you know, if the average person knew the level of training and the level of certification required to purchase this product, it would be a different story. And, you know, we're closing in on a window in some of these soybeans where, you know, over the top application of dicamba is our window's closing on when we can do that. So to Jim's point, I do think this gets sorted out. To your point, John, I don't know that it's soon enough.
And again, I mean, it's that date hits in different days in different parts of the country. But, you know, in Illinois and Iowa, we're, as you mentioned, we're in that window right now. It'll probably close, you know, within a week or so. So, you know, can the courts act efficiently enough to get a stay to make it available for this year? And as you said earlier, Jim, the timing of this really could not have been worse. I mean, it should have been either before this growing season, before planting was done, or if you wait a couple of weeks from now, it's a moot point for the 2020 growing season and for the 2021 growing season, because as you mentioned, they are in the permanent label approval process now, or the permanent registration process right now. So nothing that's being discussed now impacts the 2021 and beyond registration of dicamba.
No, and that's what I said before. Let the research go accordingly on all that, and then it'll be transparent to a farmer whether or not it's approved or not approved. Mm-hmm. And this had been approved. Yes. It had been approved. And this
it was a conditional
was
approval, but it wasn't
approval. A conditional approval, yes. And Sonny Perdue, Ag Secretary, I'm just reading, he's encouraging EPA, quote, to use any available flexibility to allow the continued use of already purchased dicamba products to limit impacts to farmers. And I think that's exactly what he should have done. The signals I'm getting is just count the time clock. Let's hope it's days and not weeks that we get a stay on this.
And that Mother Nature cooperates once we do get a ruling from EPA in the courts.
Absolutely.
And for those that are in that situation, I'll admit up front, it's not a whole lot of insight here, but there is some insight from Ken Ferry from Farm Journal Live earlier this week that's available on agweb.com. He walks through what some of the limited options are at this point. So I would encourage you to go check that out if you are in that situation. Let's talk about the other big news of the latter half of this week, and that is that the Department of Justice has asked for information from the big four meat packers. Annalisa Laca, this has been something that not just our calf, but a lot of folks on both sides of the beef industry in particular have been asking for.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise. I mean, I think when we, you know, we had the Holcomb fire and we saw the market do some interesting things then, and there was a probe then, and then what we've seen in the last few months with coronavirus and the way the markets reacted and plant closures and all that, I don't think it's much of a surprise, John.
Yeah, Jim, first of all, let me ask this, because just a couple days before we got news of these inquiries of the big four meat packers, we also heard that the Department of Justice was indicting management of some of the major poultry production companies. Is there any link here?
Don't know, but this is not the first time in the poultry industry that this has occurred. Again, I'm all in favor of this. These issues keep coming up, and they need the, if it's true, alleged, okay, the industries really need to clean up their act. And I'm not pointing fingers at all, but whenever you have a recurring problem of this, that is a onerous, situation. But let's air it out at the beef end. Let's get the facts and figures together. And that's not going to happen quick at all. Yeah. But again, this comes up, I mean, every time. It's usually when prices are low. I will put that perspective in. Usually don't get this investigation when not the product prices, but the underlying price that the producer gets. That's when you usually hear these things. And I'm not saying that's not totally out of frustration or not, but it looks like this time some of the numbers are flashing, explain some of this stuff. And that's what we're going to have to find out.
Well, yeah, it's twice in 1 year that we have seen an unprecedented disparity between packer margins and producer margins. And,
yes.
And not only do you have the mystery surrounding that happening twice in 1 year, but the packers have not done a very good job of managing messaging in that, which has just caused this frustration to bubble up. And again, not just from our calf, but also from NCBA members and the other organizations, in a rare move, all saying, hey, it's time we need to take a closer look at this and see if there is reason for deeper concern in this and deeper action.
Absolutely. You can bring in different agencies, not only USDA, CFTC, other aspects. Let's really get a thorough investigation and, once and for all, with this data.
All right. Well, let's turn to China. Same story that we've been talking about, Jim. It's, two different messages coming from the president at the same time. And then we turn to, we heard Senator Grassley this week saying, oh, nothing to see here. Everything's moving along fine. You got U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer saying we are moving mostly on track with phase one. It's just going to be the timeline going to be pushed back a little bit. Have we moved any closer either direction in this, Jim?
I think we have. I did most of my work this week on that particular topic because it started at the beginning of the week with the initial Reuters story, then followed up by Bloomberg by saying, quoting unnamed sources, quoting that state trading agencies, if that's what you want to call them, in China, was told to pause their purchases of U.S. farm products. And initially, that set soybeans down, but not as much as I thought it would when I looked at the market. And, I used to be a market reporter. And I thought, now that's interesting. If that was true, soybeans should have been down 15 to 20 cents on the futures. So then I have we have at ProFarmer a series of, China watchers, and some of them include merchandisers, okay, who ought to know. Yeah. And within 7 minutes of the initial Reuters and Bloomberg story, I got a couple sources, I'll say, saying it's not accurate. It's misinformation. In fact, we're bidding on some U.S. soybeans as we speak.
Yeah, it was remarkable how quickly that story was batted back.
Yes. And because merchandise couldn't understand. They were calling around. And also, now this was a Monday and it was a holiday. This little background story for you too, in Geneva. So it was harder to check out. Now, I know the U.S. government saw that. I won't say who. I can't. But they had certain of their workers, not only in Geneva, but in China, follow this story. Where is this coming from? Well,
was it price manipulation?
It happened. Well, it happened. They think it was an older story by a consultant. Let me just say consulting report. I'm not going to say who it was. That a Reuters writer, not in the U.S., picked up and kind of re-spun it. Huh. Okay? And that's how the U.S. government traced it through, and it was not correct at all. They have not put any pause by state agencies on U.S. foreign products. And I was told I've got to trust a high-level people in an agency in the U.S. government that ought to know. So that was just interesting. And then you saw a series of this week purchases announced by USDA in the Daily Export Reporting Service for U.S. soybeans, right, tilted toward new crop. And then in my interviews most of yesterday, I wanted to get to the bottom because Brian Grady said, you know, we need a solid front page item in ProFarmer on what's the next direction and signals for China trade. And it was an eye-opener to me. Again, you got to trust your sources. By far, the vast majority of private ag analysts and many traders don't believe that the phase one totals are going to be met. That's clear. I don't think that's earth shaking at all. Yeah. However,
not going to be met by when, let me ask. Because
by when? By what they think is a calendar year basis, but by the end of December.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in my interviews, I can't say who because I wouldn't have gotten the information. The reports say $36.5 billion that they have to purchase this year. Right. Now, they're way from that. But is even that the full story? Because that's based on FOB, you know, free on board. If it's based on cost, insurance, and freight, or CIF, then you lower the amount of products that you need to ship by about 12% or more, about $5.5 billion less. That's one angle. And we still don't know. I asked very high-level people in the U.S. government, are these purchases by China based on CIF or FOB? And I was told, basically, it's an open question.
Wow.
So that tells me that was not identified when they did the agreement. That's one. Two is that Lighthizer, U.S. trade rep Bob Lighthizer, spoke yesterday, was very revealing because he was still optimistic that China is going to fulfill the phase one. And he said March 1, but it's really March 2nd, when China announced their what the government calls exceptions, but they're really tariffs. Okay. And it took them longer to announce that. So what I'm beginning to put together is that I don't know whether they'll call it an extension or what, that it looks to me that at some future date, okay, this year, they're probably going to have a U.S.-China agreement to base those purchases on an April through March 2021 time frame. Because when you go back to the tariff announcement by China that was made March the 2nd, before you can track that, you have to wait until April trade data to start logging it in. So logically, that makes sense that it could begin under the accounting system April. Now, what's the significance if we did extend that through January, February, March next year? Very significant, because 70% of usual China purchases of U.S. farm products fall within the October through March time frame because of Brazil sold out. And that's what they are now. So that's where I'm beginning to piece this together. And it was also brought to now just for perspective, the agreement was announced January 15th, if you recall, and it took effect 30 days later, which was February the 14th. Now, you know, when you ask, well, what about the accounting system? Again, that gets a little murky, okay? And what I also found out in our interviews is that China continues to purchase Brazil soybeans, but for March and April. So they're basically sold out of beans in Brazil. But what about old crop beans? Most people are surprised that they have not purchased even more U.S. soybeans. And China merchandisers are telling us they want to wait until new crop U.S. soybeans because they feel that they'll be a better in protein levels. Apparently, there's a big that China favors protein. And if you recall, right. Brazilian has higher protein levels in their soybeans just from it's hotter when you grow them down there. So that's just an interesting perspective. But it was pointed out to me by trade analysts that, you know, boy, to reach that level, they got to purchase a lot of products, even if you did extend it into the first quarter next year. Do we have throughput capacity for that? And if you go through another 3 months, we do. However, the weather could be a fly in the ointment if you have any problems getting the product out down the Gulf or in the PNW area. So I asked the question, why aren't we pushing more out through the Pacific Northwest, which is like that's your Minnesota beans, your North Dakota beans, etc. And one exporter told me, have known him for over 20 years, that it's been hard to get farmers to sell.
Oh, really?
Soybeans in that end. So, and if you look at the agreement, market prices are very important. Yeah. So China is holding off. If there's any pause, it's from a market perspective that China is waiting until new crop. And so I think if this is all correct, it's still iffy right now. But if our reporting is correct, John and Anna, you're going to see a chunk of bean purchases between now and into the first quarter of next year. I hope that's correct, because you could have a pretty significant rally if that's the case.
A pretty significant rally right before a November election.
Well, that too. But, you know, I got a number of emails after we filed our special report on ProFarmer. Lighthizer, of course, he did this agreement. Of course, he would want to support it. If you know Bob Lighthizer like I do, he's going to want to turn tail if he thinks this thing's going to be reneged or not followed up on. You know, so no, when it comes to agriculture, I was told the first thing he asked every day, what's the latest? And he usually brings up beans. What's the latest on U.S. soybeans to China? And when he heard that China was keeping on buying Brazilian beans, apparently they called China. Like, what in the heck are you continuing to buy at a premium Brazilian soybeans? And it was mentioned on the protein levels.
Interesting.
So does China have some weather wizard that has determined that our growing season is going to allow for higher protein soybeans this year? I mean, what in the actual heck?
I don't know. Probably the same people working on the vaccine for COVID-19. You know what I mean? you don't know. But this is heady stuff when we started to piece some signals together to form this. Now, again, the naysayers are out there. I totally understand. But because USDA's following, they're going to be followers in the WASD report. They want to see proof. But look at the sorghum sales that we've had. Look at the continued pork sales. Now, we had some cancellations this week, but we had net purchases gains, net purchases. And I've said this before to you, that U.S. government people have told me China had a law. It's a law that they banned the feeding of swill garbage, okay, in hogs late last year or early this year. That is significant because up to 50% of the feed of hogs in the past has been that. Now they're going to totally move to what we would normally call, you know, soybean meal, corn, etc. And then if that's the case, which we believe it is, then you amplify that by China's going to have higher reserves, strategic stocks and reserve stocks of those commodities because of their beginning to increase their hog sector again. And by the way, it's increasing faster than what people thought. So that's at least building the case. If agriculture wants good news, this is a potential good news for the next few years if it follows suit. And as far as what the Hong Kong problem, like what about Trump thinking out loud of that Hong Kong issue is more important than the phase one? I asked that to very high level people, and I was told this, and also by China watchers, both countries worked over a year on this phase one agreement. They both want it to succeed. And that makes logical sense to me. Now, that's not saying...
That brings little relief to those of us watching a very erratic president, but...
It does. It does. And then other cynics, some cynical, a lot of traders are cynical. They'll say, well, maybe they think Trump not being reelected. And then they'll say, well, phase one, who cares? You know, so you have that mindset out there. That was made clear to me in all of our interviews this week. This is very, very different aspects to the U.S.-China trade relationship. But I'm just going on what very good sources are telling us. And there's a lot of purchases that have to be made, and we're going to have an accounting, and we're going to see.
And I somewhat joke about the president's erraticism, Jim, but in all seriousness, we have seen that erraticism increase when the president is under pressure, and he's never been under the kind of pressure that he has been this week, particularly with pressure from former Joint Chiefs of Staff and several other generals talking about the events of this week and putting pressure on the president. And that does concern me that his actions are going to be even less predictable because of that pressure. What do you think?
It's Trump being Trump, the good and the bad. You know, I like his transparency up to a point. And he just does no limits. There's no limits. See, you either, you know, a lot of people like that. A lot of people don't. I mean, you saw the tweet that he did to Senator Murkowski, Republican, in quotes, from Alaska, who came out and said, well, you know, maybe this is the time where we have to really think internally about whether or not I should vote for him. Yeah, basically, that's what she said. Well, you know, that was just bait for Trump in the tweet. That's what Twitter is made for. You know? And he just fired off at her, saying basically anybody who can breathe in Alaska who wants to take her on, he'll support them. That was kind of the essence of his tweet. So, and that's Trump.
Yeah.
That's Trump. You either like it or you don't, you know? So,
what do they call that? Verbal processing? He's a verbal processor. We're not used to presidents that verbally process in public.
We are not. I mean, his tweets on the jobs report today, you know, were classic. I mean, it was, again, ready made, you know, fantastic. He quoted the CNBC, who he likes to rail against. Of course, their glowing reports about the jobs report that came in a lot better. You talk about missing that report. And then he said, kudos to something, I'm paraphrasing, to President Trump. Just kidding, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
So he took credit for the much better than expected jobs report.
But that was a nice bright spot. And yes, there are still some very troubling numbers behind that. But to be ahead of where we thought we were going to be at this point in the recovery from the pandemic is certainly a bright spot that we will welcome.
Yes. And this survey was taken mid-May.
Right.
And I'll guarantee you, I've seen it out here in the East. I've gone out to dinner three times this week, all outside. Sweetwater's, which is a great restaurant. And I actually liked it better than before because they space you out and you can actually hear people that you're having dinner with. But I see a lot more people. And I know the Midwest is just starting to get the crunch of the COVID-19, not near the levels that New York and some other cities did. So I think you could be a little negative on saying, ooh, you know, aren't they careful? We've been through that cycle, you know, and I'm telling you, when I get on the road to fill up my car now, or a lot more people are out. And I think
a lot of people are out.
And that's what you're seeing in the marketplace. Now, the significance now are the signal that we're going to look for in the next few jobs report is the pace of the rehiring. Will it be anywhere near the surprise that we got this month? Unlikely. However, a lot of people came back to work from the mid-May to the mid-June in this next report that we'll get in July. And so this is why the market took off. We're up 900 points right now. We're up 1,000, or close to 1,000 earlier today.
So you haven't made it back to 401k yet. You're still at 301.5?
301.5K is what I'm saying, but we got another 2,000, and I'm back, baby. Now, the signal that you hear that drives me nuts on many people say, oh, only about 50% or so have an investment in the stock market. That's bull. Many companies have 401Ks, but I'll even go beyond that. If you have the run-up that we've seen, and a significant run-up, the NASDAQ has made new highs, historical highs, that gives good positive feelings to those who are participating in 401Ks, in the stock market, et cetera. But it also gives positive feelings to companies to have a little more bravado to either hire more or to invest capital expenditures. So there's your ripple effect that comes with an overall rising equities market that I don't think is adequately explained in the real world, that you don't have to have an investment in equities to get the benefits, because it has follow-through aspects in jobs and things like that. Now, I'm not saying every job, there's a lot of people still out of a job, let me tell you. But, and maybe some of the jobs won't come back because of the crunch that we've been through. But it looks, this is a pretty good base to build on. And now you've got the arguments coming back. Well, is this going to be a V-shaped economy after all? Are the hockey stick people are starting to say, ooh, you know, they'll usually defend saying, this is just one report. This is just one report. We need follow through. But at least it's a question that at least we don't have the solid implication that it's going to be either a U, a long U, or a hockey stick, or an L, you know. Are a potential V. I'm more in the W camp by my last name. I'm more in the W. I think we're going to get peaks and valleys. And that's what usually happens when you come. But this has been a crunching experience for all of us, you know, let alone you add in the negative feelings that we've seen on television, the positiveness on one side of the general public coming together on the death in Minnesota, but the negative side that it's not a protest when you start burning and when you start the graffiti and when you start looting. I don't care what anybody says. It stops at that juncture. And so
I would argue that not in every case, but in a lot of cases, those are two separate groups, and that there are opportunists in the crowd taking advantage of a situation there. And you're seeing a lot of the protesters actually start to fight back against some of that.
Yes. And you know, I said off the air for AgriTalk, but I want to say it on Signal to Noise. If you're down, you're probably watching CNN. I won't call it a news channel. I dare you to watch CNN for 5 hours straight. I mean, you'd have to have a Zoloft or whatever it's called. No wonder it's short right now. It's just horrible. Just the negative. Now they're talking about a September on CNN, a September 2nd wave. It's just negative, 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 because they want Trump out of office. And I think that's a shame, but it's no longer a news channel anyway.
I wouldn't limit that to CNN. I would include one of the cable channels in there with that.
Well, you've got MSNBC the same way, and Fox, the evening shows. But I've always said Bret Baier is one of the few straight news reporters anymore in Washington, D.C. And I'll challenge anybody who challenged me on that one to watch it. And he is indeed fair and balanced. But this is really gripping when you see the media, the so-called media, reporting
on this stuff. There is, with all the news outlets that we have here, it is shocking how little reporting there is anymore. And again, I'm saying that of all of those news channels on both sides of the aisle, because they are both bringing a very strong perspective from the aisle side of the aisle that they sit on. And I think we are poorly served with trying to get real factual news rather than perspective.
Yes. Are we into that? Is that the new normal? I hope not. I fear that may be the new normal at both ends. I mean, it's just the way we were taught, John, to reporting was to be as fair as you possibly could. You can't be totally fair in the subject you pick to write about, the headlines, or sometimes you have headline writers that can get you in trouble, you know.
The Philadelphia Inquirer saw this week.
Yes. But it's just really, just for me, looking back on the way I was taught, you just want to shake your head. So that's why I've been having to do more reporting myself, because I can't get it from normally reputable news outlets, you know, that they've just been just tilted too much. Not all the time. They pick their spots, you know?
Well, that's why the best we could do right now is watch a variety and pay attention to the facts put out and ignore the commentary that's put out, which gets increasingly difficult to do.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's do one more bad subject and then get on to some positive news.
Sure.
And that is that we are seeing more closures of events. I think, Annalisa, we were most shocked this week by the announcement for World Dairy Expo that they will not be holding Expo this year.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a heartbreaking thing for a lot of the dairy industry. The World Dairy Expo has for 51 years been known as the place to not only come and see the best of the best cows in the world be shown, but also to network with industry and learn about new technology and new products and innovation. So definitely a lot of people heartbroken right now about that.
And we also saw the Indiana State Fair canceled this week, although they are still going to make some accommodation for some livestock shows. And I don't think there was a big surprise with the Indiana State Fair, but the World Dairy Expo is a shocker because of the kind of event it is, and also because it reaches so far out into the calendar. I think that's what grabbed most of us, is that we're now seeing events into the fall cancel.
Yeah, Expo was scheduled for September 27th through October 1st.
Where was it going to be at?
In Madison, Wisconsin.
Boy.
So that is concerning to see that.
Well, in many cases, you know, I speak a lot, and now I'm more on the webinars and that. But I know a number of association groups that I've dealt with for many years saying it's really their participants, the companies that they work for, have prohibited travel.
Yeah.
On that. And then you've got to lock in. I guess there's a date at which you can bail out, if you will, a hotel accommodation. So it's, I think it's forcing, you know, decisions. I was asked just 2 days ago whether or not I would feel comfortable for an August speech getting on a plane. You know, I'm in one of those risk groups, but I would. I know it's because I think by August, there would be continued learning in the airline industry. And you're seeing airline stocks take off right now because they were battered. So I think August forward from individual groups, as long as they don't have a chokehold on having to commit to the hotel accommodations, hopefully that'll be the time that we have confidence, It's not there yet, that you can travel without driving a car to places, because as we said last week, I drove last weekend and it was very eye-opening to me. I didn't have any trouble, but the Marriott did a fantastic job of keeping you very distant, doing your own sheets. If you wanted them, you had to bring them down to the lobby. No one came into your room, and they keep room vacant after you leave for 48 hours. So I think more and more of that is going to go on. And hopefully we will have pharmaceuticals by the fall that would address if you did get COVID-19 to temper the impacts. And hopefully within the first quarter or so of next year, we'll have a vaccine. So that would just be a kick in that we can get our life somewhat back to normal.
All right, well, let's wrap up.
Yeah, to John's point about it being so far in the calendar, I think one of the things that was the most surprising is that it's actually the county government that's saying, no, you can't have it far from now. So it wasn't really a decision, you know, based on exhibitors not being, it was more of like a government. And so fortunately, from my perspective, fortunately for my budget and Farm Journal's budget, because it was force majeure, we are getting out of our hotel contracts, which it's crazy to think about. But even just for us as a company is like $40,000.
Yes, yes.
And so it'll be really interesting to see the loss in, just revenue generated in that county and in that town because of World Dairy Expo this year.
Real a rapid fire, John. The jobs report today, if it continues, I think it will impact the coming debate on the next phase 4 of the COVID relief package. Now, does that mean agriculture? I don't think so, because we've had bipartisan support for what the Democrats proposed, but the level won't be $3 trillion that was in the Democrat package. And the Republicans. No. And the Republicans are pushing a $1 trillion. So what's going to give? I think big packages on both sides. I don't see any extension to that $600 for the unemployed. So it could have an impact on that. We saw the first indication from USDA. What was it? $545 million in payouts under the CFAP.
Hats up to USDA. They really did get that out efficiently.
Yeah, but you can see some of the, now remember the applications, you have to go on that. How many people applied? Because Sonny Perdue said 7 to 10 days they would get the check. It looks like they are slow under the specialty crops for an obvious signal that they hadn't dealt that much at all with this type of a program. So, but we're going to get every Monday, we're going to get reports so we can track it. Thank goodness for USDA to be transparent on that. But I did want to bring those two particular topics up.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jim. And rather than doing where we're going to watch this next week, unless there's something in particular you want to throw out there, let's end the same way we did AgriTalk this morning, Jim. And let's talk about what is positive out there. I mean, we've talked about that people are taking cautious steps to get out again, to start slowly bringing the economy back. We've seen a lot of people out, even just taking advantage of the nice weather to be out in social distance at the same time. We saw the jobs numbers today. We have, as I mentioned this morning, while the protests are heart-wrenching, I think it differs from previous times in our history when we've seen these protests, and that you are seeing very little factionalism in those protests. You're seeing a large portion of America of every color come together in seeking fundamental change in how the United States and the structure of the U.S. addresses race. So I see a lot of optimism in that as well. What about you, Jim?
I totally agree with that. And it's time for the right change. Yes. That should have been, you know, a long time ago. But as far as other positive moves, you notice that in those states and areas that have opened up, either phase one or phase two, we have not seen the increase in a dramatic increase, if at all, in COVID-19 cases. So that's another positive signal if it continues. I'm not saying you shouldn't be six feet apart and things like that. Be careful. Wear the mask where you should, and don't touch your face. But I think the number,
where we are in a month before, yes, we do anything else.
The numbers are see where you are, but the numbers are starting to provide some data. So once you get the country moving, Jaron, again, it'll just build on itself, and that's got to be positive. And again, I'll bring the marketplace into it, the equities market. That just instills you, because you're not looking at a $18,000, but over 27,000. Yes, over 27,000. If that's not good news, I don't know what is. And I don't watch much any television other than Netflix or Hulu Plus or Disney, you know, because I can't watch the news anymore. I just don't like the focus on the looting in the black areas. I came from the St. Louis area. Remember the Ferguson story? Mm-hmm. I'll never forget someone put the CVS in Ferguson in flames, and they never reopened.
Yeah,
in Ferguson. And so now the people in that area have to go further to get their medicine. And that's the downside of these radicals, you know, whomever, rather than you protest with your voice and signs and numbers. Okay. And I think the plus side on that is what you just said, that as long as you can keep it peaceful, you know, Martin Luther King had it right. You don't make two wrongs, does not make a right. You don't go the violence area. You can really move it far differently. So I'm more upbeat. Actually, this was an upbeat week for me, with the China purchases, with the farmers getting their crop in, with the weather maybe warming up in some other parts of, I've come from Southern Illinois. I mean, they have way too much rain again. That's just bringing up a lot of positive things. Plus, my irises are beautiful this year.
Annalisa, what about you? Where are you seeing optimism this week?
Well, we got our first crop alfalfa up, so that was a bonus. Yeah, it was a little bit touch and go there for a bit. But to Jim's point, you know, crops are in, and we did get some early reports from companies that follow retail sales of dairy, that dairy sales, even in the retail case, are still trending well above normal for this month, even with the reopenings and some of the restaurant reopenings. So that was something that we were concerned about. And then, you know, when you look at the dairy space, we've got record high cheese prices. Block cheese is well over $2.50, and we've seen $20 milk this week. So things are significantly more optimistic in the dairy market right now.
Very good news. And some of the farm income estimates that I've seen are not including some of these, if they are at all, the recent income transfer payments that the ag sector is getting. So don't get too down when you're reading farm income estimate. Look to make sure of what it's included and excludes, because I think that's giving a worst case scenario, because probably over 40% of net income this year is going to be from government payments.
And add to your list, Annalisa, 8 straight months now of increases in dairy exports.
Yes. So. Yeah. April exports, particularly, I was going to mention this when we were talking about China, but we moved on to other topics. But even dairy exports to China are well above, you know, almost double in some cases last year levels. So,
Now, if that's not positive, I don't know what is.
All right. Well, let's end on that then, since it's a nice positive note. I always feel better after a conversation on Friday, and this week in particular. So I thank you both for the conversation this weekend.
Sure.
And the inside stories, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're going to have an even better one next year?
I can talk about it. Well, I'm going to continue to delve into this China issue. I want to keep it rolling. You know, I just hope that we continue to get those daily purchases of greater and greater quantities, and not just soybeans, the Milo, I call Torka Milo, dairy, pork, etc. Let's continue the ball rolling, because exports are the great lifter, because it gives you the margins and you need profits in this environment.
All right, it's also our record longest DC signal to noise podcast, so we better wrap it up. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. We'll be back again next Friday with another DC Signal to Noise.